Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
I meant those blackout motorized shades.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. I installed these and then got some from my mom. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Hall of Fame son.
They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Blinds.com is the GOAT.
Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off site-wide and free professional installation. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places that I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times?
You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show. Hour number two already. All right, let's run down Port O'Connor way. Let's check in with Captain Lynn Smith, see what he's up to. Good morning, Lynn. What's up?
Oh, man. Well, it looks like the tide's up.
Yeah.
Tide came back in.
That northeast wind pushed her water back in, man.
It sure did. It did. I'm glad to see it, you know. Get that water back
believing.
In these lakes. I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. Yeah, I got back from the fishing show, and the tide finally came back in. But I enjoyed it at the fishing show. Got to see a lot of old friends and reminisce and everything, and talked about the year, and talked our hunting up, and talked all our hunting and fishing.
Yeah.
So it was fun. I enjoyed the fishing show. And I only spent one day down there, but I still got to see a lot of good friends.
That's why you enjoyed it.
That's true. But it was fun. I got to see a lot of people. Talked to Captain Sally, and we talked about Baffin a little bit. And right. I hadn't been down to Baffin in quite a while.
Yeah, and, you used to go down there with Tommy every winter, huh?
I did, yeah. Yeah, I went down there and fished with Tommy, and we'd fish, two or three days and have a good time. But I haven't done that in a long time. But anyway, Sally's been trying to get me to come down there and fish with her, and I just haven't had the chance. But I need to do that, middle of the week.
Yeah.
Flip down there. She's got a nice place down there, I understand. So I need to do that, get down there and fish with her. But anyway, it was a good time. Had ball. But, yeah, I live down. I never will forget the first time I fished Baffin. I was working with a fellow that grew up in Kingsville. And he said, oh, man, you need to come down there and fish this place called Baffin Bay. I said, oh, okay. So I went down there, and I looked at a map. I said, let me see a map of this place. He showed me this map, and I kind of looked it over, and I pointed at this one spot, and I said, drop me off right there. And it was Starvation Point. I said, put me off right there. So they idled over and dropped me out off the boat. And I said, y'all aren't going to get out? He said, no, we're going to go out here to one of these reefs and fish off this reef. I said, okay. So they idled out. While they were idling out, I was already hooked up. And I was waving my hat at them to try to come back, and they just kept on going, Well, after a couple of hours, here they come back to get me. And they came up there idling up to me, and they said, and he said, look, he said, man, it's just not happening this morning. I said, y'all didn't do any good out there? And he said, no, not, they're just not turned on.
No, they're all in here.
Yeah, I had a stringer full. Yeah. And he said, oh, my gosh, you caught all these just waiting right here? I said, yeah, get out of the boat, man. Boy, and they piled out then. They piled out and started catching fish. But, I said, those fish are all on this shoreline. And so, boy, they jumped out. But made a believer out of them.
Oh, yeah.
I guarantee you. Yes, sir. But no, I love Baffin Bay. I love that area.
Yeah, I do too. I like it down there.
Oh, I do. I had a friend of mine down there with me one time, and we were waiting at shoreline, and I said, well, I'm going to go back and get the boat. And he said, okay. I said, you see that PVC sticking up over there, that little PVC? He said, yeah. I said, when you get close to that, I said, work that over real good. That's a rock pile. And I said, we usually catch one really good trout around there, around that rock pile. He said, okay. So I waited on back the boat, and I finally got the boat and the island back over to get him. And when I pulled up there, he was kind of smiling, and I said, what are you smiling about? And he'd called a 28. He'd called a 28 inch trout right off that spot, right off that PVC. I said, see, I told you. I said, that's a good spot. And he said, oh, man, yeah. He was all grins. He's caught a good one.
It's amazing how them big fish get in them rocks like that. They just, you know, that's their home. That's where they want to live.
And oh, yeah.
They got the cover. They got the safety, you know, issue, everything. They just feel right at home there.
Oh, yeah. Well, the bait huddles around those rocks, you know.
And it does. And that's why they like them, because they just blend in, laying a little nook and crannies and ambush bait. They don't have to work hard for food.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I love it. And I love fishing down there. It's awesome. I fished with Cliff down there one time, and I had a good time with him years ago. But that was a good trip.
Yes.
We fished around the tide gauge mainly.
Tide gauge bar over there, yeah.
Yeah. I caught my biggest trout just inside the tide gauge years and years ago.
Longest trout I caught down there. It didn't weigh much because I caught it in August, but I caught it right there on a little Bagley finger mullet topwater.
I'll be darned. I caught mine on a Corky Devil.
I'll be darned.
And I'd gone to Paul Brown's house and was shooting a bull with Paul, and he said, let me show you this bait I just made. And it was a Corky Devil with a paddle tail. And I said, that's interesting. He said, well, I just made these. He said, you're going to Baffin. I said, yeah, we're going down there. And he said, take a couple of these with you and try them. I said, okay. He said, let me know how you do. I said, okay. So I put that bait on, and I made my mind up I wasn't going to take it off till I caught something on it. And, I threw that bait religiously all morning long. And it was in March. And it was cold and mist and rain and, you know, nasty. It seems like that's when you catch those big ones, boy, when it's that kind of weather down there. And I caught that trout. You know, she didn't fight. She didn't fight hardly at all. Just didn't give me a really good fight. And I got it up there, and she had sucked that big old Corky Devil down all the way down in her throat. And had that one treble hooked right down where the gills joined. And I thought, well, this won't be bad. And I reached in there with my hemostats, and I popped it out. And I had her by the tail trying to resuscitate her, you know, and try to let her go. And I saw a little blood come out of her gills.
Right.
And I said, oh, this isn't good. And I thought, well, maybe I better put her on a stringer and see if she's going to make it. So I put her on a stringer, and a few minutes later I looked back and she was upside down and there was blood just gushing out of her gills. And I said, oh, just as well I strung her, because she's not going to make it. And she was bleeding like crazy. And I thought for sure that fish wasn't hurt the way she was hooked, but she was hooked bad right where those gills joined.
Right.
Way deep. So I kept her. And anyway, my buddies came to pick me up, and they came idling up. And I pulled that stringer up real close to me where they couldn't see that fish. And this one buddy of mine, he'd never caught a fish, you know, 30 inches or better. And he was up on the bow of the boat, and he could see there was a fish on my stringer. And they idled up there. He said, "Is that a redfish?" I said, "No, it's a trout." And when he got up there to me, I just kind of flipped that fish up onto the boat, and I said, "Measure that one and tell me if it's legal." and his eyes got as big as saucers, you know. He went, "Oh my God!" You know, and that fish was over 30 and weighed over 10.
Man,
yeah, weighed over 10 pounds.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was a beast. It's a
beast.
That's
a beauty.
But you know, she'd have never made it. Or I tried to let her go, but she wouldn't have made it.
No.
I was wading back to my boat in Baffin one day, and I saw something white floating, and I waded over to it. I couldn't resist it. I had to see what it was, and it was a 31-inch trout, and had a hard head, about an 8-inch hard head lodged in his throat.
Oh yeah, he couldn't suck it down. Yeah,
and that hard head got his fins open and locked up and drowned that trout. Actually drowned it.
Yeah. I found them like that before, you know, choked to death on mullet.
Mm-hmm. You know,
they get them lodged in there, and they can't. And sometimes you can pull that mullet out of there, and that fish will swim off. But
yeah,
other encounters I've seen where they were already dead. They just died.
Well, this hard head killed that trout.
Yeah.
31 incher. Yeah.
Man. Mm.
Yeah, and the trout wasn't in real bad shape. I mean, it wasn't decomposed, you know. And I thought, man, I ought to have this fish mounted. I mean, it's beautiful, you know. But I said, well, but I didn't catch it, so I'm not going to do that. But I had my picture taken. A buddy of mine took my picture of me holding that fish up. I mean, it was 31 inches. That was a beast.
Man.
And I said, man, what a fish. That hard head killed him.
Yeah, you get to bust them 30 inches and above. That's Brendan Crockett trout right there, buddy.
That is.
You know, but I didn't know those. You know, those rocks in Baffin Bay, they're anywhere from 20,000 to 30,000 years old.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah.
You know, they were called beach rocks, eventually,
yeah.
But you know, like the Serpulid reefs, they're younger than the beach rocks. They're like 300 to 3,000 years old, and
yeah,
those are the ones you find in Baffin and like Laguna Salada and Cayo de Grillo and Alazan and all that. But that's that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, these are worm colonies. Mm-hmm.
Serpulids,
yeah. You know,
I call them serpids.
They kind of crunch when you walk on them, but some of them do. But they're solid. I know one thing: when you hit them with your motor, they're solid.
Yeah, you hit them with a lower unit, you're done.
Yeah,
that's
Oh yeah, I hit them before.
That's why you get idle around, trimmed up, or use your trolling motor and piddle around. It's that's nothing to play with, especially at 50 or 60 miles an hour. You're done.
Oh, I'm telling you. Yeah, they can ruin your day.
Yep.
They've ruined them many a day. I guarantee you.
But, you know, the salinity is so good, great down there. That's their hard structure. You know, oysters won't grow in that kind of salinity.
No.
Now, if those
no,
rocks
you don't see
were in a fresher environment, you know, like beach water environment, you know, 32 parts per thousand or whatever, then you'd get oyster growth on them.
Yeah.
But they're nothing to play with, Bubba.
No. Yeah, a friend of mine was down there. He said he was down toward the land cut, and he saw something sticking up, and it was the bow of a boat sticking up out of the water. No good and well, they hit some rocks is what happened, and they sank that boat.
Yeah, you want to stay in intercoastal when you're running into the land cut there. If you get off
of
those flats to the, you know, to the north side of the intercoastal, you're not going to make it. You're going to hit something. Man, all that from Penescal Point, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, west.
Oh,
is
it's
just
bad.
That's treacherous. Really treacherous.
Oh, big time.
Like
yeah,
the Badlands.
Yeah, the Badlands. I've pulled all through there, and it can ruin your day big time.
You know, and look at all the artesian springs they have. You know, from, you know, just outside the Lancot all the way through towards Mansfield. And a lot of people don't know that. Come off that, north side. A lot of artesian wells.
Yeah.
Big time. They even list them on the charts. Let me knock this break out.
Really?
I'll be right back, Lynn. Hang on, man.
All right.
You're listening to The Outdoor Show. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And welcome back to The Outdoor Show. All right, it's 5:18. All right, Lynn, we're back, man.
Yeah, a friend of mine was down there in Baffin. They ran to the land cut. You know how you hang a left and you go back through one of those canals and you run into what they call the graveyard, you know?
All right.
And they said, well, let's just chase some redfish back in here. And I'll be darned if you didn't catch a CCA-tagged red and won a boat, motor, and trailer.
Wow.
Right there. Yeah. Yep, and he was coming home. He called a friend of ours. He said, you want to see a boat, motor, and trailer and a truck? He said, I'll show you a tagged redfish that just won one. And that's where he caught it. Yeah. Incredible.
Well, you can't win if you don't enter. Look how many people have caught them and were not signed up.
I've told you, there was a guy here caught one that wasn't entered, and he wasn't entered, and about a year later he caught another one and wasn't entered.
Well, he didn't learn much.
No. Well, what are the odds? I mean, what are the odds?
That's,
you know?
I mean, that's like hitting the lotto.
Oh, God. Yeah. But, yeah. But, you know, they usually release two here, and I think they release two in every place, you know. Give people good odds.
Is it two? I thought they did them in like little packs of six or whatever, four to six fish or whatever.
Probably depends on population.
Next time I talk to Bill Kenny, have him on here, I'll ask him about that.
Yeah, but you know, they always say they at least release one where somebody can catch it that doesn't own a boat. You know, they're fishing.
Oh yeah, they make it a point to release them because they want them caught. I mean, that's sure. They want everybody to, you know, to catch them all up, and it's just, man, you know, the last few years the weather's been so crazy after those releases that nobody gets to them. You know.
I know. Now I've caught tagged reds and tagged trout here, but they aren't CCA tagged.
No, they're that's TPNW tags. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I caught a red one time that was tagged, and I didn't even notice the tag till I got home, you know, and I was on the cleaning table, and I went, whoop, this fish tagged, you know. And so I went over to the Parks and Wildlife and took the tag over there because I said, I'm going to check to see where this thing was tagged. Well, he was tagged a year and a half prior to me catching him, and he was tagged exactly where I caught him.
Yeah. In that song.
Yeah. And they said, you know, as long as those fish have bait, the bait's there, they don't lease. They just don't lease.
No. Y'all's fish are more stable down there because you don't have many events like we do to move those fish. You know, when we get these severe floods, I mean, it moves everything, even the redfish. And they're freshwater tolerant. But, yeah, that's I can see that.
Yeah, this biologist told me that they did have, I think the farthest one that they can remember is they had one that was caught at the Port Aransas jetties right there. I think that was the farthest one they found that they had tagged. And that's pretty far away, but, you know, but they travel up and down the shorelines.
You know, I used to get invited up into the, back then it was the HL&P cooling pond. You know, it's Center Point now or whatever, Reliant, I don't know what you call it. But anyway, Bill Baker was a biologist there, And they'd have a tagging thing every year, you know, every spring. And we used to, he'd invite us in there to, you know, we caught everything on rod and reels, tag the fish. And then some of them they would release over the outer spillway wall, the one that goes into the bay. And we tagged a redfish one time, and, you know, they threw it over the wall into the bayside. That fish was caught 24 hours later at the Galveston jetties from the very top end of Trinity Bay where we tagged him.
Really? Really?
He got in and out into the bay from the cooling pond and said, "Hey, I'm heading to the Gulf." You know, and it was a fairly big red, you know. It was in that 28 to 30-inch, you know, size range. And he took off, and two guys fishing the jetties caught him 24 hours later. Turned the tag.
Good grief.
Isn't that something? That's a long ways.
Man, I'm telling you.
He probably got into school with his buddies or whatever and said, "Hey, we're out here. These guys are ripping holes in us. We're going south." They took off.
God almighty. That's incredible.
Exxon had a tagging program. They call it the Exxon Tiger Tag or whatever it was back then. Trying to remember Dave's last name. He was with Exxon. He headed that up, you know, with the CCA. And I forget who all was on it. We all had tagging guns and tags and all of our paperwork. It was me and Blaine, I think, Plog, Jimmy West. I mean, there was about Rick Kersey. You know, there was a bunch of us in Galveston Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is back when we had millions of fish. And we tagged. Man, I don't know how many fish we tagged. I never had a tagged return. Now, Jimmy tagged one, and I think he tagged it on Hannah's Reef, and somebody caught that fish 2 years later. Same place.
Huh.
So,
some of them,
you know, and probably it was a resident fish. It wasn't a tide runner, you know, that uses the Gulf. A lot of them, you know,
we've
seen with these other tagging programs where they'll move 60 miles.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But they're probably tide runners that use the Gulf, come into the bays in the summer and exit and move down the coast a little ways and pull back in. And
Because I see them, I see the reds in the bay. You know, they're coming down the shorelines and they're headed to the Gulf, you know, in schools. I mean, big schools of reds. They're headed to Pascavallo. They're heading out, you know.
Right.
So they're heading out to migrate out to spawn. Spawn in the surf.
That's what they do in the passes. That's where the spawns take place. Big time.
That's right. That's right.
The eggs are fertilized by the bulls, and the eggs are become buoyant, and the tides carry them into the estuaries.
Oh, yeah.
For hatching and fingerling purposes.
Well, I've seen those big schools, you know, just come through there. I mean, come all around you. I mean, it just it makes you just hold your breath. I mean, you know, there's so many of them. I mean, people just can't believe it, you know.
And I read an article one time. It was very interesting. Florida Fish and Wildlife did a spawn study on speckled trout. And 90% of that spawning goes on during the nighttime hours in darkness. And they had microphones where they could hear the male trout grunting, in which stages the females, they come to that when they're ready to drop their eggs, and then the males fertilize them. And that was a really good article. I forget what magazine I read that in 20 years ago.
Oh, man.
Well, maybe not that long, but it was a while back. But it was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
how
many eggs these fish lay per year, and, you know, they do it in stages. You know, you get 2, 3, 4 spawns off of one fish. But the female has to have a male sizable enough, half her size, to have enough sperm to fertilize the eggs properly to get all of them.
And I'll be darned. Yeah, it's
so if you get to catching 6 and 8 pound males in there, you might want to stick that out. There's some giant mamas in there, buddy.
Ooh, isn't that the truth?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll catch a male trout, and boy, he'll grunt, you know, and I'll tell customers, I'll say, "That's a male." And they go, "How do you know that?" I go,
"He's croaking, man.
Listen to him.
He's a drum. Yeah, he's a verbal fish, just like black drum, redfish, croakers.
Yeah.
They're all in the same
male
family.
Yep. Yep, he's talking to you.
That's something. The males are verbal.
And, yes, they are.
In our species, the females are verbal. I hope
yes,
nobody heard
are.
That. No, it just,
oh, yeah.
That was just a joke.
Yep. I hope your wife didn't hear that.
No, I know she didn't. I know what she's doing right now. She's
oh, yeah.
dead in the world, buddy. Crashed.
I hear you.
But she's night
oh,
owl.
Boy. Oh, yeah.
It's
she's crashed.
Something we've grown accustomed to. You know, I'm sleeping when she's awake, and she's sleeping when I'm awake.
I hear you. She's used to it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, man. Well, it looks like the deer season's winding down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I talked to the ranch manager there in George West, and he said that they brought in a big load of protein. He said the deer were looking a little puny, so he ordered get this, he ordered 25,000 pounds of protein and fill the protein feeders. Filled them up. And they ate half of it in a week. They ate 12,000 pounds of protein in a week.
My gosh.
Isn't that something?
Pretty nuts, yeah. man.
It is. But he said, you're seeing the bucks now. You know, they're starting to shed their horns and really good. And he said, you'll see some bucks and you can tell, they've shed their horns and you see those red spots on top of their heads. Their horns are gone.
Yeah.
But
so y'all are already, they're already losing their horns in the George West area?
Yeah. Yeah, they've already started. Not all of them, but you can see some of them have already shed. So it's started. So, if you know, you can still shoot does. Well, you can still shoot the bucks, too, but till the end of February.
Yeah.
But in our MLD. But
right.
Anyway, they're looks like they reached the quota, pretty much reached the quota. I think they're up to about 80 does that they've killed on the ranch on 9,000 acres.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good number. That tells you how many deer are on that place.
Yes. Yeah. It's a lot.
Yes, it is.
Really
yes,
is.
It is. And wow. And those deer, you know, you're starting to see a lot of does now, he said, which means those bucks are just, you know, they're through really fighting over them, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, some of them could be losing their horns because they're fighting.
You know,
over
Blaine
them.
And them, they're still tearing them quail up. He sent me a whole table covered in them, kind of like a dead dog shot. But,
I bet.
He said the weather's miserable, but, man, the quail hunting's just been phenomenal. It's just absolutely crazy. And they're still seeing good bucks here and there. You know, there's still some trying to breed does right now. It's crazy how late it goes. It really is.
I'll be.
Here it is, the end of February.
You know, I hunted quail one time with a group of us, and we were hunting down in Pearsall. And, boy, it was windy as it could be. And you know, we had dogs and everything, but every time the dogs went on point, these guys would run up there to the dogs. Well, I was shooting a 410, and I told this other buddy of mine, I said, just lay back here downwind from the dogs. And I think there were five of us, I think, hunting. And I told this friend of mine, I said, just lay back here with me. And so we'd lay back downwind. Well, when the quail would get up, they'd flush, and they'd get up into that wind, and they'd just peel back downwind and come straight to us. Well, it was like shooting a low house target on the ski.
Right.
Range, you know,
it was screaming.
A low one.
It was screaming with that wind behind it.
Yes, and they'd come straight to us. Well, we were shooting them with a 410 coming right at us. And, boy, we were smoking them, man. We were working on them with that 410.
That's fun.
And,
that's good
it
stuff.
It was fun.
You bet. Let me knock this break out, Lynn. Hang on. I'll be right back, buddy.
All right.
All right. Well, folks, if you're looking for the ultimate outdoor adventure, well, welcome to Rusty Hook Ranch, a premier hunting and fishing destination right in Matagorda, Texas. Whether you're after waterfowl, quail, thermohog, alligator hunts, and top-tier Matagorda Bay fishing charters, Rusty Hook Ranch has got you covered. Bring your friends, family, and clients, and the boys at Rusty Hook Ranch will take care of everything from you. For you for five-star lodging, skeet shooting, and sporting clays to a fully stocked bass pond, and your weekend here will be one you won't soon forget. So if you need a place for team building, family reunions, weddings, or other events, Rusty Hook Ranch can sleep large groups of up to 40 or host events for up to 300 people. So why wait? Experience the best of Texas at Rusty Hook Ranch. Book your adventure today at RustyHookRanch.com. That's RustyHookRanch.com. And tell them Captain Mickey sent you.
Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
I meant those blackout motorized shades.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. I installed these and then got some from my mom. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Hall of Fame son.
They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Blinds.com is the GOAT.
Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off site-wide and free professional installation. Rules and restrictions apply.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Outdoor Show. It is 5:36 here in the Bayou City. All right, Lynn, we're back. We were talking a little bit of deer. Little deer.
Well, we're talking those quail. It
well,
was funny.
Quail, yeah, we went into quail, didn't we? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. What was funny was we were walking along hunting those quail, and it was windy. Oh, man, that wind was gusting up to 30, I think. And anyway, these guys, boy, every time those dogs would point, these guys would run up to them. And those birds would flush. Well, when they would bust into that 30-mile-an-hour wind, they'd just scatter. They'd go every direction, you know. And so I was laying back. Well, this buddy of mine noticed that I wasn't running up there with these other guys. Well, after about five coveys that we'd flushed, he laid back. He said, man, it's pretty tough into this wind. I mean, these birds are just going nuts. He said, how many do you have? I said, I don't know. I got seven or eight. He said, what? He said, I got one. He said, how are you doing this? I said, just lay back with me on this next covey. I said, I'll show you. I said, they flush up into that wind and then they blow back toward me. And he said, oh, that's how you're doing it. I said, yeah, just lay back here with me. Well, boy, that next covey, man, they flushed and they went straight up into the air and then blew back toward me. And we just started smoking them like if you're standing on station one on a skeet field,
right,
and the low house target comes at you. I mean, it was murder with that little 410. It was fun. Well, we started working on them. And it was a blast after that, boy. Then the other guys started catching on to what we were doing. And we got another guy coming back there with us, and he laid back there with us too. And we started really working on them then. It was a lot of fun. but we had some good eating quail, I'll tell you that. Man, that was good. Shooting them with that 410 with number 9 shot.
Nothing better than wild quail.
Oh, it is. Man, it was good. Mm.
And nothing harder to shoot than wild quail.
Oh, I'm telling you. I'll tell you what.
They're challenging.
Wild pheasant isn't easy. I'll tell you that.
You know, I've never pheasant hunted, but I've heard that from other people. You know, think that big of a target, when it gets up and flushes, it would be easier to hit. You know, kind of like a dove.
A wild pheasant is fast. They are fast. Yes, sir. They'll fool you. They're pretty fast, but if you don't just kill them right off the bat, if they hit the ground and they're not dead, they're running. I mean, they can run like a horse, man.
Yeah, I can't.
Oh man, we hunted pheasants in North Dakota, and I knocked one down. I'll never forget this. I knocked one down, and he landed in a plowed field, and he hit the ground. And he started running. He was kicking up dust going out across that field.
Man.
I said, oh, my goodness. I mean, he took off running. I mean,
that rooster was leaving a rooster tail of dust.
I'm telling you. It was unbelievable. Yeah. But, no, those pheasants are fun to hunt. They really are. Yeah, we
do.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad table fare. I never could figure out a good way to cook them, though. I never could.
That used to be the deal, you know, pheasant under a glass back in the restaurant
days. Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't what the folks were eating.
Yeah, I know. One of the guys with us had a real pretty pheasant. He wanted to have it mounted. And we went to a taxidermist up there and to drop it off to get it mounted for him. And we were in there, and I looked around, the guy, I said, man, what kind of pheasant is this? And it was a golden pheasant. I said, oh, my goodness, that's pretty. And the guy said, yeah, every once in a while you'll see one. Well, boy, I was looking for him after that, man. I wanted to find me a golden pheasant, and I never saw one. But, man, what a pretty bird that was. You know, they're yeah, few and far between, but boy, that was a pretty one. That was some bird. But we shot some really nice ones. There was a group of us went up there and had a good hunt, fantastic hunt. But we had all the shooting we could stand. We got to a draw one time, and alongside a plowed field, and we stopped and they dropped us off to be blockers, you know. And the guy went around on the other side of this draw, probably quarter of a mile, and then they walked up that draw and drove those pheasants to us. Mm-hmm. And, oh, my goodness, when they came out of that draw, I don't know how many pheasants were in that draw. But when they got to the end of it where we were, I don't know how many came out there. But, boy, it was incredible. It was a turkey shoot, I guarantee you, boy. They started coming out of that draw, pheasants after pheasants. And, man, oh, man, just hang on. Keep loading. They were coming out of there. And, man, it was something else. That's a beautiful bird, I'll tell you what. I hunted them in Kansas, and it was snow on the ground. Pretty heavy snow, and we were walking along and flushing these pheasants in a cornfield, and this buddy of mine said, we stopped, and he said, check this out. Look at here. And you could see these tail feathers sticking out of the snow. And he reached in that snow and pulled a pheasant out. He reached in there and got him and pulled him out of the snow.
Man.
He was buried into that snow. Yeah.
I just looked up a golden pheasant. Man, it's also known as the Chinese or rainbow pheasant. Man,
oh,
they are beautiful. Look how red they are with the gold wings and gold head.
It's a
gold
beautiful
comb.
Bird. Beautiful
That's
bird.
Unbelievable.
Oh, he's pretty. Man.
I'd mount that, too.
Yeah. What a pretty bird. But, we had fleshed some pheasants one time, and they flew into a field that had high grass. And so we knew the pheasants were in there, and we worked our way over to this one patch of high grass, and we were standing there waiting on the flush, and we had a lab with us, and this lab was running around in that high grass chasing those pheasants because we knew they were running in that high grass.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm standing there waiting on a pheasant to flush any second. And a pheasant ran into me. He hit me and jumped. He flushed right up in my face. Now, you talk about a shocker.
That'll wake you up.
Oh, my goodness. He flushed straight up into my face. My goodness, what a shock that was.
I had a
man.
Incoming blue-winged teal coming in wide open. One of my customers shot it and hit me right in the face and rolled me clear out of the blind one time.
Oh, my goodness.
if it had been a gadwall or a bigger bird, it killed me. Probably broke my neck.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, how many times have you had a goose fall and almost hit you, you know?
Ooh, yeah, I've never had one hit me, but I've had them land pretty close.
Oh, I've dodged a bunch of them.
I used to have a dog that would catch them in the air. She didn't want them to hit the ground. She'd run around in a circle looking up and try to catch them when they're falling around us, catch them in the air.
Oh, my goodness.
Crazy.
No broken wing could hurt them, you know.
You think?
Boy, yeah.
That bone sticking out?
Yeah, that could hurt him.
Had a customer or a listener listening in wanted me to ask you what size shot you think is the best for a pheasant. He's going pheasant hunting for the first time this year.
Well, I'd shoot fours, probably.
Fours, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, they're a tough bird to bring down. They really are.
Yeah, they are. They're pretty hefty, pretty hardy.
Yep, they really are tough to bring down.
Not like what you'd shoot a duck with, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I actually hunted, I've hunted them several times, but one time I hunted with a 20-gauge, 3-inch 20-gauge shells is what I shot them with.
Right.
And that did a good job. It did a good job. But other times I hunted with a 12. But that 3-inch 20-gauge did good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're a good shot and you get it on them, I mean, there's not much difference in feet per second or anything like that. It's just less shot.
No.
Less shot.
No, it's
pattern,
the same.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. It's the same. So, you know, just as well. It's like, like you say, feet per second is the same. So,
right.
You just got to, the shot string is the difference. Yeah.
That's it. Different pattern.
Yeah.
Not as big.
Yep. That's right. So, anyway, I tell people you're not losing much going to a different gauge. It's just the shot string is the difference. You know, 28 gauge throws the best shot pattern, really. Your shot string is sharp.
Yeah,
and,
I know a lot of guys, that's all they dove hunt with is 28.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love a 28. Yeah. Yeah, I love shooting a 28. Way back there in the 80s, I won the state championship with a 28 one year.
Did you?
But, I love that gauge. It was a super gauge. And, you know, I never shot the 20 gauge well in competition. I just never did.
Right.
I just didn't have confidence in it that well. But the 28, I always did. I love shooting the 28.
Did you ever shoot with Bob Brister back in the day?
Yeah. Shot with Bob a little bit.
Was he good?
No comment. I always heard a lot about
he was into shotgunning big time. I thought I'd ask him, a real pro.
Bob was a trap shooter.
Okay.
He wasn't really a skeet shooter. He was a trap shooter.
I got you.
Yeah. At a Greater Houston Gun Club, Bob was always shooting trap. He never really shot skeet.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't that serious about it. But he was a trap shooter and a pigeon shooter. That was his main thing.
Boy, Blaine and I got invited to a pigeon shoot one time. They never did invite us back.
Yeah, y'all work on them?
That was listo. Let's go. Did they even have pigeon shoots anymore with all this ideology and everything? I know that, a lot of your environmentalists, they look down on that. But all a pigeon is rare wings. They're a menace. I mean, why not trap them and catch them and let people have sporting events with them, you know?
Yeah, they do. It's just not real publicized or anything. They still
do. It's pretty private, yeah.
Yeah.
I can understand that.
That's plenty sporty, though, I'll tell you.
Yeah, it is. It's fun.
I mean, it's a big thing in Europe, you know. Big thing over there. Yeah, it's and years ago it used to be really something. I mean, they'd kill a lot of pigeons, you know. But I mean, it's plenty sporty, you know. They used to have them at Greater Houston. They had them all over the place. I mean, down and out pigeon shooter, a serious pigeon shooter, they'd travel all over the place and spend a lot of money.
Right.
It was and you'd make a lot of money at it. Yeah. Well, Grant Elsing, you know, Grant told me one time that that the hardest pigeon ring that he ever shot in was in San Antonio. And there was a building there right there with the pigeon ring. The roof on it was such that the wind blew off that roof and kind of went upward. And where the pigeon ring was, the column bearer, the guy that threw the pigeon, was standing there. Well, he would throw a pigeon. If he knew how to throw it, the wind would whip the pigeon and whip it up in the air. And if you shot that pigeon, you shot him straight over your head, the wind would blow him out of the ring, and it'd be illegal, you know.
Right.
He would be called lost. So anyway, Grant told me that was the toughest ring he had ever shot in, and he had shot all over the world, you know. Mm. So,
man.
Yeah. Grant was a heck of a guy. You know, he used to shoot in competition or shoot in exhibitions. And he told me that he went to on an exhibition years ago, and he said he went on a skeet field and shot 100 straight on the skeet field. Then he went over to a trap field and he shot 100 straight at trap. And they said, okay, now what kind of trick shooting do you do? And he went, trick shooting? I don't do any trick shooting. And he said, so he called his boss and he said, hey, he said, I don't do any trick shooting. And so his boss said, oh, okay. So they sent him a train car load of ammunition. A train car.
A train car?
Uh-huh. And he started practicing different trick shots. And he would take a shotgun over his head, upside down, and shoot targets anywhere on the field. Anywhere. And, I mean, he was an incredible shooter. He was incredible. during the war, for his war effort, he and Robert Stack...
The Untouchables.
What they did during
that Robert Stack?
Yes. Yeah.
The Untouchables.
Yeah, that one.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He and Robert Stack, they trained guys to shoot Thompson submachine guns and 45s.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they did. I went to the Olympic trials in St. Louis.
45 caliber Thompson.
Yeah. I went to the Olympic trials in St. Louis, and they draw names for where you shoot on the squad and what number you shoot on the squad and all that. And I got drawn to shoot with Robert Stack. And I shot third on the squad, and he was second. So I shot right behind him. And what you would do in the trials is you'd shoot 25 targets, and then you'd go sit down until everybody shot 25 targets. And then they would turn the crank, and then everybody'd go shoot 25 more. And so we'd go sit down and just shoot the bull, you know, and talk.
Right.
And it was amazing to talk to him, because he would talk about his friends like you would talk about Blaine and all your fishing buddies, you know.
Right.
And all his friends were movie stars, you know. I mean, you know, it was kind of funny to talk to him about that. But he was a nice guy. I liked him. He was good to talk to. But he was
good old boys, man.
Yeah, that's
everybody
it.
Puts their pants on the same way.
You know, he was a world champion skeet shooter as a kid. He was a junior shooter in California. But he was a world champion as a junior way back there, back when Lassie was a pup.
Yeah, Lassie might have been a gleam in another dog's eye.
That's right. right.
There had to be a million Lassies back in the day.
Oh, you know it.
Dogs don't live that long.
No. But, yeah, that was something.
Yeah, you could tell back in, you know, when you watch all the old Westerns and, you know, like, you know, the Untouchables and movie that involves guns. Those guys, those Hollywood people, they knew how to shoulder a rifle, hold a weapon, and look natural at it. Nowadays in Hollywood, I mean, they don't know how to get the gun up to their shoulder or anything. It just looks fake.
Isn't it something? You know, Grant told me when he was shooting, like as much as he did, he shouldered his shotgun 100 times a night. That's what he did to exercise.
Right.
He shouldered it 100 times a night, and then, and that's what he did to exercise. And which wasn't a bad idea. You know, not a bad idea.
No, muscle memory.
Yep,
put it in the same place every time. It's like golf, tennis, baseball, anything. Mm-hmm. It's all muscle memory.
That's right. That's right.
In the zone, especially baby.
Especially if you shoot international style skeet, where you've got to have the gun lowered below your elbow.
Right.
And then you don't raise the gun until the bird clears the house.
Right.
Snap shoot. Yeah. So that's real important there.
Yes, it is. Very important. All right, Liam. Well, fun conversation, man. We kind of covered a little bit of everything. We even killed a few pheasants this morning.
Hey,
somebody wants to call you about going fishing this year when this weather breaks, when we get on some kind of pattern. How they get hold of you, man.
Man, I'm ready to start, man.
I know you are.
I am. I'm biting at the bit. Anyway, they can get me at 361-935-6833. And I'm ready, man.
All right, Lynn. Well, you have a good one. I'll talk to you next week. You be safe, buddy.
All right, Mickey. You too, buddy.
Later. All right.
Bye.
All right, that's Captain Lynn Smith down in Port O'Connor. All right, it's time for our top of the hour break, national anthem, and all that good stuff. You're listening to the Outdoor Show here at Sports Radio 610. We'll be right back.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
I meant those blackout motorized shades.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. I installed these and then got some from my mom. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Hall of Fame son.
They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Blinds.com is the GOAT.
Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off site-wide and free professional installation. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback, I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
The holidays are behind us and school routines are back. Now is the time to help your kids start the new semester strong. IXL helps students refresh what they learned in the fall so they head into the new year feeling confident and prepared. With new units and new goals, IXL is the simplest way to build better habits and stay on top of lessons without the stress. As teachers dive into new material, kids can practice those exact same skills at home to make sure the lessons really stick. IXL is an award-winning platform covering math, language arts, science, and social studies for pre-K through 12th grade. It's personalized, interactive, and actually fun. Keep your kids motivated for the second half of the year at IXL.com. Don't miss out. One in four students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
It's a new year, and it's time to get your picks in 26 with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop Bob's for hot new styles featuring the latest technology, like stylish sleeper sectionals with immersive Bluetooth audio, relaxing reclining sofas with LED lighting, and fabulous fireplaces with mood lighting and speakers, all at Bob's everyday low prices, of course. So if you want to refresh your room for less, save big by stopping in or shopping online at Bob's Discount Furniture.